This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. All those listening live at TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host for today, Michael Remus. Welcome, everyone. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
That's way too many ahs and everything else. April Fool's Day, everybody. And legitimately, good evening and that welcome to it. NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. That was producer Michael Remus getting his moment in the spotlight.
That was the best intro ever.
He got the name of the show wrong, for God's sakes.
Did he?
Yeah, he said it was the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is NHL Midweek with Illegal Curve Hockey.
It's a technicality.
No, it's not a technicality. It's the name of the show.
It's the same show.
It's not the same
Different
show.
Different day.
Okay, cut your mic now. You're done for the rest of the evening. 2 hours of hockey talk on this Wednesday evening as we get you caught up on the NHL's playoff race. We'll talk about the Dustin Byfuglien and what we expect to be a suspension coming down the pike probably sometime tomorrow. But we start, of course, with last night's Winnipeg Jets 3-2 defeat at the hands of the New York Rangers. Second straight loss for the Winnipeg Jets on home ice. Second straight loss where they were tied heading into the final less than 4 minutes to play. Obviously, Sunday night had they gave up the winning goal with 30 seconds or so to play, and last night with about 3 minutes and 45 seconds to go. Your thoughts on the game last night, your thoughts on the second quote-unquote heartbreaking loss in a row for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, guys, I think it's pretty obvious to say that last night's loss was completely demoralizing, as was the loss to the Chicago Blackhawks before that. And you have a Jets team that has played extremely well and has outplayed the opposition in their home rink at times, and they weren't able to get any points. And we know that at this time of the season, when you have other teams winning, so you're talking about the Vancouver Canucks and Calgary Flames specifically, teams that they're competing with. The LA Kings lost their last game, but they've also been turning their game around, and they're obviously in the playoff race now. But it's a situation where if you fall asleep for a blink of an eye, the game can be over. And we saw two late third period goals against the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings. New York Rangers. And, you know, Chris Kreider's a great player, and he's had a great season. And he scored a nice goal. I don't think that the Winnipeg Jets have anything to worry about. The obvious thing they have to worry about is missing the playoffs. But what I'm talking about is the way they're playing. And these are two of the best teams in the league, guys. These are two teams that went to the conference finals last year. And when you talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, they've won the cup a couple times in the last 5 years. So it's completely demoralizing. The season is not over. But you definitely don't like what you see, Richie, because now you're in a situation that you probably have to win 4 of your last 5 games.
Yeah, you know, I agree with what you said there. It's a tough loss. I mean, the team has played. Yeah, I didn't catch all the Chicago game. Caught kind of the first and the third periods, really. But last night's game, the Jets played a really good first period. Just weren't able to get a lead out of the period. That was a problem. And then had their spurts at the beginning of periods and such. But overall, I thought it was pretty even after that. Just weren't able to take advantage of their opportunities. And, you know, you can talk about process all you want. I think you said Adam Lowry say it, you know, they need wins. It doesn't matter about process now. They need wins. And certainly, you know, you've seen some young players take some nice steps this year, and there's going to be positives in any event, and that's kind of the background story of this all. But you don't know, right? You don't know. The West is pretty open. I mean, we talked about that on Saturday's show, how open the both conferences are, and you don't know if it'll be that way next year. You don't know if some of these teams are going to turn it up and add a player or two and become an unstoppable force. And right now, the Jets have as good chance as any, really, to make a run. So you need to get in. So, and you got a lot of free agents. And again, the young guys have proven their worth, and you got some young guys coming up through the system. So it's certainly not anywhere close to the end of the line. But again, the way the Jets have played this year, especially against good teams, and they've been in every game, that's a recipe for being out in the first round like any other team, but also going on a run. So you want to find a way to squeeze in and get your matchup, but you have to start winning games. And so you can talk all you want about, oh, we outshot them here, outshot them there. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter when you're trying to make the playoffs and you're at the end of the season. You have to be able to capitalize on your opportunities. And, you know, guys like, you know, you can't really blame Brian Little back from injury. He had a couple of great chances, but of course he's a little bit rusty. You know, there's posts and all, but and there's a couple of breakdowns that you want to avoid, and then decision making that are they affected by the pressure? I don't know, but you know, it's a tough situation.
It almost, from my perspective, to some extent, I think it's a function of the best teams in the league. And you can easily say the Rangers and the Blackhawks are two of the best teams in the league. Find ways to win those games while simultaneously demoralizing their opponent. I mean, if both those games go into overtime and the Jets lose, people shrug their shoulders and move on. But for the Blackhawks to win in the dramatic fashion they did, for the Rangers to win in the dramatic fashion they did, where Kreider, I mean, uses his best weapon, which is his speed, to get in the breakaway and get the goal, it's just a function of the best teams, I think, finding ways to win games. The Anaheim Ducks are playing the Edmonton Oilers tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Both those teams have played, like most games in the NHL, they're one-goal games. The Ducks have lost one one-goal game in regulation time. The Oilers have lost 15. Obviously, the Ducks are a better team than the Oilers, but the Ducks find ways to win games that are very close games right up till the end of the contest.
Right, Drew, and the Jets have found ways to win games. I mean, we've seen that time and time again this year. It started with early on in the season, but continuing through the season with wins in Chicago, but we saw them beat the Tampa Bay Lightning on the road 2-1 in a game, really, that they weren't very good, and they beat Montreal at the beginning of this homestand, mm-hmm. guys, in a game in which they were outshot badly and outplayed badly in the first period and for parts of the second and third period. So I think the Jets can find ways to win. I know what you're saying, though, Drew, the veteran teams, the teams that have been successful year after year after year, they seem to find ways to win more so than maybe some of the middling teams, and that's what the Jets have been now since they've come over from Atlanta. They've been a middling team that has always been below the playoff line. Sure, during the lockout year, they were leading the Southeast Division, but they ultimately didn't end up making the playoffs. But, you know, Richie talks about how they played against some of the best teams, and we've talked about this over the course of this year. The Jets have seemed to be better against kind of the heavier teams in the Western Conference. They've kept those games a little bit tighter against the St. Louis Blues, against teams like the LA Kings, who they beat in early March. But this Rangers team, I thought they looked pretty sluggish in the first period. Lundqvist was clearly still shaky. He was not good in his first game back, which was against Boston on Saturday. Mm-hmm. We did the show while that game was going on, but I thought he got better throughout the game. And you're talking about a team, I mean, Dan Boyle, you know, he might be towards the end of his career, but he still looks good. And this is a team that can get offense from various lines. And you know, to me, if you wanted to sum up these last couple of games, you know, in addition to these two losses being completely depressing for not only the team and the fans, it's that the Jets once again prove that they can skate with these teams. They're not intimidated by these teams. And I know a lot of the focus has been on, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's cross-checked and the expected suspension.
We'll talk about that next segment.
Yeah, and it really, to me, they were in these games and they were outplaying Chicago and New York during parts of this game. I thought, you know, the Rangers started to come on midway through the game, and in the third period, I thought the Jets
none of these teams are that
hung
good,
back a little bit.
None of these teams are that good.
But I'm just saying, I mean, if these are the best teams...
Yeah, they are. As I'm saying, that's it's a free
for all. I'm saying that the Jets can skate with the better teams. I think that Anaheim and Tampa are the two best teams, but I think these two teams are probably top five.
I think you ask 10 people, you get 10 different answers.
That's possible.
Yeah, and I think there is an upper echelon group, and then a bottom, you know, we talked about it all year, and then a bunch of middling teams, but there's no big distinction even between those top ones and the next level. And I think something we didn't mention is Chicago comes into the game having lost two games in a row. Mm-hmm. Chicago never loses three games in a row. New York comes into the game having lost two games in a row. Good teams don't lose three games in a row.
The Rangers actually had lost three in a row, but your point, they don't lose four in a row. They don't have extensive losing streaks. They lost to Los Angeles.
They beat Ottawa after LA.
You're right. I apologize. Yeah. You're right. They did.
Both teams lost two games in a row. That's all right. Both teams lost two games in a row. And the problem is, Drew, and as is good teams, again, I just said, don't. These teams are good. They know when to turn it on, and they know, and they feel. Again, you're talking about Chicago and New York teams, and they're a different situation than the Jets are. And by that, I mean they're in the playoffs. This is a long season. These teams have veteran players. They've been through a lot of games. If you don't think they turn it on when they need to, mm-hmm. you're wrong. And it doesn't mean that they don't work at all in the other games, but they turn it on to an extra level. So they feel that, hey, are we going to go into a bit of a lull into the playoffs here? 3-4 games in a row? No, we're not going to. And they put a stop to it. And I thought you saw a little bit of that yesterday. And we haven't even talked about the fact that after the first 10 minutes of the game, after he looked a little bit shaky, in my opinion, Henrik Lundqvist looked like he was back in the groove. And he's been out for a month. He had played again on the weekend, but didn't look very good. The first goal, in my opinion, was a weak goal by Jim Slater. But after that, he was completely in the zone. And it's tough to beat a good goalie and a good team. And that's what the Rangers have, and that's why they can certainly beat anybody in the Eastern Conference.
We were talking post-game, Richard, and you sort of made the point that the Rangers' best players were their best players.
Yeah.
And you didn't think that was necessarily true of the Jets players
last
night.
They weren't. It was the best. The point was that the Jets need to have their best players to win. And third and fourth line contributions are nice, don't get me wrong. But yesterday, Derek Brassard, Derek Stepan, those guys were the best players on the Rick Nash. Those guys were the best players on the Rangers. And Mark Scheifele, Wheeler, and Stafford have been great recently. And then Ladd Little, obviously, they had their chances. But the Jets' best players weren't as good as the Rangers' best players. And in these must-win games, they need that. And that's not to cast blame. Say, oh, my, you know, because they've been really good. It's just last night, that was an example of needing your best guys to be your best guys, and they got outplayed by the other team's best players.
Sure, Lowry was probably the best.
Defense as well, by the way. The defenseman on the Rangers outplayed the defenseman on the Jets.
Yeah, Lowry was probably the best Jets forward last night, and that's great for Adam Lowry and his development, but, you know, push comes to shove at the end of the game, Chris Kreider made the play and got them the
Chris Kreider wasn't even one of the top five or six Rangers last night on the forward. Yeah. It wasn't. So, I mean, that's a depth thing, too.
Sure, they have a very impressive depth. Yeah. A bit of a problem but something that I found to be a little bit concerning, and probably speaks to what Ezzy was saying about the demoralizing nature of the last two games, is that when the Rangers scored to take the lead, and there was still 3 minutes and 45 seconds to go, I was expecting a pushback from the Jets, there wasn't one.
Yeah, I can see that point. They looked a little bit demoralized. You would have hoped for more pushback there. Yeah. That's fair. I think they're just a little, they're caught, they're a bit scattered, and they don't know what happened, they don't know where to go, and I thought the Rangers played a really effective end of the game. Like, they played it like a team that knows how to win, as they sealed everything, and obviously but Bufflin's and discipline penalty at the end hurts too. But yeah, I think that's a fair point. They didn't give you back what you wanted. I don't think that's anything to read into, but it's last night that was what happened.
And these two losses, they really come down to, pardon me, bad timing. And, the Jets win five out of six games, and then you lose, I guess you want to look at it like three out of four games, and you're losing points. And as you mentioned, you don't get a single point in either of these games, and teams aren't going on extended losing streaks. Well, you can't really go on an extended losing streak at this part of the season, but, the Jets, as far as the best players, I mean, Brian Little comes back. I thought he was pretty good. He had a few shots on net in the first period. Andrew Ladd, I thought, had a strong game. Adam Lowry goes down to the third line, and they had to reorganize the lines. You had Matthew Perreault there on the left wing, and Lee Stempniak there on the right wing. And I thought that line was pretty good. Perreault, you could see on the power play, he was starting to get his legs back a little bit. But it really comes down to how close these games are. I mean, these two games were very close, and if you wanted to say where the momentum was or which team had controlled the pace, I think you could argue that at times the Jets controlled the pace,
for sure.
At times they didn't. But
that speaks to getting in the playoffs, Ezzy, right? Giving yourself a shot, because who knows?
The line is so thin right now, Richie, and you're right. I mean, I think we haven't seen a dominant team, arguably since when Pittsburgh and Detroit were battling for the Stanley Cup back in 2008, 2009. Like, we haven't
seen... Well, Chicago's been the best team in the past 10 years,
sure.
I think. 2000.
Yeah, but I'm just saying,
10.
I know what you mean. That dominant,
yeah,
where
stretch.
Sidney Crosby is playing the way he was back then.
Let me pose this question to you, because I think that's a good point. What happens next year if St. Louis is able to add a top 10 netminder? You know what I mean? How the window,
Sure.
You want to take your chance when you can. Again, this doesn't mean there's a window that's closing. It's not, but... just speaks to that ability and the openness.
It's a wide open season, so you might as well take advantage of it, because you're never sure when they're going to come around again. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the Dustin Bufflin cross check and whether or not we think he will be suspended. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We are live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Music is what happens when we send Remus and Richard away for a weekend. We will promise not to do that again. Welcome back to NHL Midweek, this segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Ezzy, we're playing rec hockey tomorrow, you know, sort of early evening. You have your mouth guard ready for the game?
Of course I do.
Okay. Just want to make sure that you're not going to be such an idiot.
How can you be the Hamburglar and with the mouth guard?
That's true. I am going to bring some hamburgers on the ice, of course.
Naturally.
But
yes.
It's not going to be
your fuel, like Popeye and spinach.
But it's not going to be for me. It's going to be for my goalie, Rick Ralph.
Yes,
Rick Ralph. Actually a really good idea to bring burgers. I bring them.
Really? That's a good idea, you think?
Yeah. Throw them on the ice.
We're all overweight and out of shape to begin with, so let's start eating hamburgers while playing hockey.
Well, Drew, you're going to do it before and after anyways, so might as well do it while you're on the ice.
Take the high road, Richard. Anyways, welcome back to NHL Midweek. Talk about the Dustin Byfuglien hit on JT Miller. First question I have for you guys is, we were all at the game. Did you guys notice the hit? Because I sure as hell didn't until postgame.
Not only did I not notice it, I thought after the game everyone was talking about the incident towards the end of the game with Matt Zuccarello. I was in the scrum with Alain Vigneault. I was in there with our friend Andrew Gross and Larry Brooks was in there. And Pat Leonard was in that scrum. And I forget who asked him about it. And I told you guys up there in the press box after Alain Vigneault called the hit violent and deliberate and said that there was a good chance. He said that he thought that it was one of the most violent cross checks he's ever seen. I was a bit surprised that Alain Vigneault said that in the scrum, because a lot of the time when there's incidents in games, Richie, the coach just kind of chooses not to talk about it.
Right.
But as far as the incident goes, look, we've all seen it now with YouTube and Vine and all this stuff. Everybody sees it.
Regular television.
Regular television. Everybody's probably watched it 25 times now. This is my comment. I think, first of all, Dustin Byfuglien will be suspended, but I think it's been blown out of proportion big time, and I'll tell you why. And I'm not going to give the usual spiel about, hockey's a violent sport and all that. Dustin Byfuglien has no history of suspensions or fines, and that doesn't completely mean that he's off the hook here. But he's not a dirty player. In fact, Dustin Byfuglien, when he's on his game, can be the most physically dominant player in the NHL. Now, the incident itself, I know some people are saying, he should get 5 games. He should maybe get 8 games. He might even be charged criminally. I mean, come on. I don't think his intent was to injure JT Miller. I think Buff made a bad decision. He's going to have a phone hearing tomorrow, and he'll probably get 2 to 3 games. But all of this nonsense, like these articles and saying that Byfuglien is in the wrong here.
That's the day and age we live in. Everybody needs to blow everything out of proportion.
It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, Buff has been the MVP. I've said this before. He's been the MVP of this team this year. He's played defense. He's played forward. He's scored winning goals. He's scored goals on the power play. He made a mistake, and he's probably going to have to sit. As I said, I'm imagining it's going to be 1, 2, 3 games. It's not going to be 5, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, come on. I don't think we should be villainizing him. That's what I'm saying.
Well, let's provide our analysis of what we think it'll be. If people are going to go take to the internet and the papers and write all the articles about criminal stuff, sure. I mean, they can have that form. I'll opt not to spend my time reading it, but they can do what they want. What do I think he'll get here? I think he probably gets 2 games, and that might be light. I'm not saying that that's fair. I think he probably deserves 4 games for the cross check. I think he probably gets 2 because of how important the remaining games are. And even though every regular season game is ought to be considered equal, I don't believe that it will be. I have some reservations, and maybe I'm reading into it too much, that you're dealing with a New York City team, big time papers, big time attention. If this happened against Nashville, it wouldn't be getting the same attention, in my opinion. So I think that may play a factor. Also a factor, of course, that JT Miller wasn't hurt and helped set up the game-winning goal. So I think those are all play factors. And Byfuglien's history, as you mentioned, I don't believe he's been suspended before.
He has not.
And I agree with you, Ezzy. I don't think he's a dirty player. I think he's an aggressive player who plays the game the right way. So I think it'll be 2 games is my prediction, and I don't think that's an end of the season. That's something that will result in the Jets' end of the Jets' season because, you know, Trouba and Myers are more than able to carry big minutes on the right side. Myers has proven already he's able to play the power play in Bufflin's absence. So I wouldn't panic if I were a Jets fan. It would be it's an important loss, don't get me wrong. But especially against the Vancouver team on Saturday, and we're obviously forecasting that he will be suspended for at least a game or two. Vancouver team on Saturday that isn't very top, I mean, it's pretty top heavy. So if you're looking at your three pairings, it's not as significant against the Vancouver game. In terms of Monday, Tuesday, well, then it's a little bit different.
Richie, this should have nothing to do with how long he's suspended for, but the fact that there was no penalty call to me is ridiculous. There's two refs on the ice.
Fair enough, but on that play, it's a turnover in the Jets zone. Pass. I think it was a stall with the shot. But things are happening quickly. Big transition. Like, I didn't catch it. And I'm not saying that the ref has a better vantage point than I do. Although we have a pretty good view of the whole ice.
Yeah.
I don't blame the refs there. I mean,
I'm not blaming them. Yeah. I guess maybe I'm indirectly blaming them.
I assume you're not saying that they saw it and didn't call it. No. I don't think that happened.
No, and we've said this time and time again, right? Because we've been doing the show for a long time. And whether or not a player is injured, I also think shouldn't factor in as much.
I agree with that. You should factor in, but not as much.
Yeah, like the Daniel Carcillo incident, guys, to me was worse because I think that he knew exactly what he was doing and he knew exactly where he was cross-checking Perreault.
So you don't think Bufflin knew what he was doing when he cross-checked
I don't mean that literally, Drew. What I do mean is I don't think he was trying to cross-check him in the neck. And I know that the reality is, though, if you hit someone with your car, doesn't matter whether you're trying to hit them with your car. The reality is you hit them with your car, right? So I think that's a good analogy here. I mean, I think that Dustin Bufflin did.
Driving the car, it's especially worse.
No, I think Buff made a mistake again. But this whole, you know, everyone saying that, you know, Bufflin, what is he doing? He's letting the team down and this and that. I mean, come on, guys. This is the MVP of your team. This is a guy that time and time again has stepped up with the big goal. He made a mistake. People make mistakes. I don't think this is by any stretch of the imagination, Todd Bertuzzi or Andre DeVoe in the Swedish league. I mean, come on.
See, everybody, these guys, I mean, these people, to compare it to DeVoe, I think it's compounded by the fact that he took an undisciplined penalty on the empty netter.
We disagree on this one. I didn't hate the penalty he took on Matt Zuccarello because I think that if he doesn't take that penalty, I think the Rangers, Zuccarello is able to get the pass off and the Rangers have a two on empty net.
Drew, you make the play or you don't. You make the play clean or you don't because the penalty is the same as losing the game. You have an offensive zone faceoff with, 30 seconds left, 5-on-4, and, you know, so I think you have to make the play clean or not. He basically cross-checks him or elbows him high in the head, yeah, then punches him 4 times in the head. Yeah. I mean, I have an issue with that.
Sure.
That was a stupid play. Is that the reason they lost? No, but it was a stupid play.
Do you think that Buff... back to sort of the question I asked Ezzy about intent or not. Do you think he knew what he was doing when he went to cross-check?
I think hockey is an emotional game. He was frustrated and cross-checked. I don't think... Was he intending to take his head off completely? No, it was a stupid play. He should be suspended accordingly. I wouldn't read into it any more than that. I think things just get blown so out of proportion these days.
I agree with you there. And usually you and I disagree on that sort of thing. But, I mean, this wasn't a play that deserved a column to be written about it. Which, you know, Bruce Arthur, all respect to him, he wrote a column in the Toronto Star about it. It's going to be in, I think it's in today's Toronto Star, it might be in tomorrow's, and was published online today. Eric Macromella, our TSN colleague in Ottawa, and I mean, this is his job. He's his job to write the legal view of action in sports, writing, was Bufflin's play a criminal act? And I mean, come on. It was not a criminal act. He didn't take his skate off, chase a guy around the ice trying to slice his throat. It's not getting carried away.
Yeah,
here,
but Drew, if you're going to write about that, I mean, we were at the Montreal game.
Sure.
If you're going to write about Bufflin cross-checking JT Miller, why don't you write about Nathan Beaulieu trying to basically knee Andrew Ladd at the blue line? He tried to take his head off.
Sure.
Well, I guess in this case.
It's a slippery slope, isn't it? That's what you're trying to say.
I mean, I think because of who it is and what team it is, I think everybody is able to kind of dogpile on this issue. And I think it's a little bit ludicrous. This, again, we've seen suspensions in the past. And again, I'm not trying to say that what Dustin Bufflin did wasn't bad. I think there's a lot of kids, young hockey players watching, and I think you need to send the message. Mm-hmm. The NHL needs to send the message, Drew, that this is not allowed. If Daniel Carcillo is going to be suspended for what he did to Matthew Perreault, I don't think it's as bad.
Truth be told, you crush like a guy in the shoulder different than crushing him in the face.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I truly believe. I Gary Lawless was talking about it on HNL just before we came on. I really don't think that I think he was trying to cross-check him in the back. And he ended, and not to say that that's better, but when you cross check a guy up around the neck and head area, I mean, yeah. You can. I agree with Alain Vigneault, by the way. I think it was a violent cross check, and he really could have. I mean, you're talking about possibly giving a guy neck damage, so I think you suspend the guy, but I think you do have to take into account that it was semi unintentional.
How many games do you say?
I say he'll get two.
Richard?
I already said two.
You said two as well. Let's hear from Bob McKenzie. He was on TSN 690 in Montreal, and then we'll head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek.
I mean, I usually try not to get too overreacting to violent acts in the National Hockey League. I've seen a lot of them over my time, and I know quite often there's a very shrill response, especially now with social media, but boy, oh boy, oh boy. I watched that Dustin Bufflin last night on JT Miller, and I'm just looking at it, and I go, I can't believe what I'm seeing here. This is not good. And as I said, I'm pretty liberal when it comes to, I'm actually one of the two people in the game who think that the occasional cross-check, especially for a smaller player to a larger player to give himself some space or to keep somebody honest, I understand those. But this one just had a defenseless player down on the ice, and Big Buff is a big man, and he's really fortunate he didn't do serious damage on this play.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
6:30 in the evening. You're listening to TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the Los Angeles Kings insider, John Rosen. John, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure to welcome you to the program, John. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Los Angeles Kings as we're entering into the final six games for the Kings, heading into the playoff chase, and the playoffs beginning, of course, in about 2 weeks' time. Everybody sort of throughout the NHL has sort of been waiting for the Kings to make their move. You know, when are they going to go on that big run that is going to finally put them firmly into a playoff spot? Yet it hasn't happened yet. Why hasn't it happened yet?
Well, there are some personnel challenges that the team is dealing with right now. You know, I think that the schedule recently has also been a little bit of a hurdle. But by and large, the Kings have been playing very good hockey since the All-Star break. They obviously had the 8-game winning streak earlier in the year. Jonathan Quick, only by virtue of, not getting some help in the most recent game against Chicago, saw his goals against average since February 7th rise to as high as 2.00. But Quick has been terrific recently. I think if you're looking just at the last couple of games, they dropped games at Minnesota, at Chicago. It was a tough way to end the five-game road trip that they went on. But they finished 3-2 on that trip, and really, they weren't going to fall out of the race unless they had dropped all five games. By and large, you know, what they'll do over the final six games, especially an upcoming three-game trip to Western Canada where they hit both, Vancouver and Calgary, in addition to Edmonton, will really have a long ways in determining where this team will finish in the standings.
John, we have to ask you about Mike Richards, who's from nearby Kenora, Ontario. He's obviously, as you know, had a very tough year, and he's been the subject of trade rumors and buyout rumors and all of that, and he spent some time in Manchester. Since his return to the LA Kings, how has he played, in your opinion?
Up and down. I think the performance that he would be probably the least proud of was probably the last one against the Chicago Blackhawks, a -2 in that game. That said, too, the entire Kings team had a very poor performance in that game. It wasn't just Mike. I mean, really, other than Jonathan Quick, perhaps the Nick Shore and Dustin Brown line maybe were the only really, individual-type efforts that you could commend after that game. But he was fine looking earlier against New Jersey, the New York Rangers, New York Islanders earlier on that trip. I thought he was fine. I think if you're expecting him to kind of go out there and provide the same type of minutes, the same type of production that he had, not just from Philadelphia, but maybe earlier in his Kings tenure, you're going to be disappointed if that's what you're hoping for. But at this point right now, the Kings are a team that has excelled because of their center depth. When you get past guys like Andre Kopitar, Jeff Carter, who this year has been playing center where he had been a wing previously, that's really been a staple of this team's play. They need him to be playing one of those depth roles. So whether or not he can play that third, fourth line center, I certainly think that that's going to be a position that if the Kings are to find success and if they are to make the playoffs and go on a bit of a run, that's the type of role that he's going to have to play, and he's certainly capable of doing that.
John, three-part question here for you. It can kind of all interrelated, really. You know, you have the Slavovoinov issues that he's facing, and I think there's an update in terms of his appearance at court today, and he's also been injured, apparently, off the ice, so maybe I'll have our listeners or you inform our listeners about exactly what happened. And then Andre Sequeira, who really was acquired to replace Voinov, is now also hurt. Can you give our listeners an update on him as well?
Gosh, yeah, I feel like I was like an ambulance chaser trying to get injury information out today. Just a bunch of interesting, hits to this Kings team. Regarding Sequeira, he has a lower body injury. A Blackhawk fell on his leg late in the second period of the Kings' loss in Chicago back on Monday night. He's out indefinitely. He didn't skate today. You know, obviously this time of year, teams are so tight-lipped about this stuff. But Daryl Sutter said that he's out. That's basically all he said. Conversations I've had with hockey ops, I mean, it's not as if there's, a rosy scenario they're envisioning here. They might be out with him for a little bit longer. As for Slavovoinov, his injury, he suffered a torn Achilles while he was during some recreational activity that was away from the hockey rink a couple of weeks ago, I'm led to believe. I don't have an exact timeline of when it occurred, but I do know that he underwent surgery to repair the Achilles last week. Surgery was successful. But outside of the legal proceedings, just from a pure personnel standpoint, complicates the decisions that will have to be made. Is a torn Achilles and surgery, that's a 6 months to 1 year type of an injury. But there was a pretrial hearing today. The big question, and I wasn't at the trial, but I'm going to post a story pretty soon, and I was following Rich Hammond of the Orange County Register very closely, and for all the reports that I was seeing there, the big question right now is going to be whether or not Voinov's wife, Marta Varlamova, will have to testify. The judge is going to need a little bit extra time to decide on that, so the entire trial is pushed back until early July, right after the free agency period starts, with the judge, Judge Eric Taylor, deciding whether or not that she's going to have to testify on, I believe, May 4th right now at this point. So still a little bit up in the air. Obviously at this point the personnel decision is not as important as the legal proceedings, and hope that the alleged victim in this case is okay.
John, in terms of pay, I'm not sure if he's, I know he's on this like suspended list right now or whatever the specifics of that are, but in terms of having an injury off the ice, whatever activity he was doing, how does that play into, the team's ability to not pay him on that basis?
That's a question that I'm just thinking of right now, even just as you're saying it, and I don't have an answer for that right now, just because, I had heard a rumbling about an Achilles injury about a week ago right now at this point, but did not, think it was, it didn't come from a source that I would immediately go and check on it. So at this point right now, I just don't know. It's so unbelievably complicated. Mm-hmm. And again, for the financial salary cap flexibility standpoint, that's secondary right now to the legal proceedings, as that trial will now take place over the summer.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is the Los Angeles Kings insider, John Rosen, talking about one of the teams involved in the chase for the final Western Conference and Pacific Division playoff spots. John, another player whose status you updated earlier today on LAKingsInsider.com is Tanner Pearson. The Kings have, of course, been out without him since, for a number of weeks and almost months at this point in time. What's the update on Pearson? And if the Kings do end up earning one of the final playoff berths in the Western Conference, is it the expectation that Pearson's going to be back in the lineup for them?
Perhaps. If that were to happen, we'd have to check in and, we'd have to kind of update at that point. But Pearson was injured in a game against the Jets back on January 10th, which was a 5-4 Winnipeg shootout win in Los Angeles. And he suffered a broken lower fibula down low near his ankle. And this was an injury where he has obviously gone through all the process of having to rehab, and now he's strengthening it. Under a month ago, he rejoined the ice with his teammates to kind of test it out, was dealing with a little bit of pain back then. That's mostly dissipated. He's mostly pain-free. joined the team on the ice for full practices at the beginning of the road trip when the Kings were in New Jersey last week. So all seemed to be going well. He even got in some line rushes during morning skates and practices. And he even, you know, speaking to him today, you know, he thought that there was a chance that he might be able, you know, on this homestand to perhaps even give it a go. But he went through an X-ray yesterday, and it showed that there just hasn't been sufficient healing at this point. So still right now, too early to say when he's going to be back. In speaking with him, it's just so tough for him right now as a young player. You know, he was visibly frustrated earlier today when we spoke, but at this point, he called it, you know, optimistic to think that he would be back at some point during the regular season. So, you know, it's still a wait and see. This was an injury that at the time was a 3+ month injury. So 3 months from the injury is April 10th. So we'll see maybe if he's back for the final game of the regular season, but he won't be playing for sure against Edmonton tomorrow night.
John, a big criticism of the LA Kings this year has been that they look tired. When you talk about Drew Doughty, Jeff Carter, and there were others, but you talk about those guys specifically being on Team Canada, they played well over 100 games. I think it was 108 games. That's probably not including the preseason, but do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think where that really comes into play is probably in games 30 through 50, maybe 40 through 60, somewhere in that area. There's always the adrenaline at the start of the season, but absolutely, I mean, these guys aren't robots. It's not just the physical fatigue and the grind that gets to them. It's also having to, you know, maintain the very high gas tank, you know, emotionally and mentally to be able to compete night in, night out in the National Hockey League, especially when you're going into other cities and other hostile environments as defending champions. Obviously, it's a, you know, challenge that any team would love to have. Again, by and large, this is a team that has been playing its best hockey of the season since the All-Star break. The Kings are trending upwards, though, of course, there were two poor efforts. Or I should say the Chicago effort was poor. They had a very poor start against Minnesota back on Saturday night in St. Paul. But they've been trending well. They've been getting the goaltending. It's tough now for this team, and you know, they're going to have to battle through another injury with Andre Sequeira out. But this is a team, even though that they did have that fatigue earlier in the year, and it's something that they didn't have to deal with a couple of years ago because they didn't defend their title in a full season. It was a lockout shortened season. But you know, certainly, I don't know if it's that they're tired, but there is that challenge mentally, physically, of having to repeat after there were certain guys that played, you know, I mean, Slava Voynov played all preseason games last year, played in the Olympics. Not that he played much this year, but there were players that played upwards of 115 games.
You know, John, we were talking about it earlier on in the show. I mean, do the Kings have the, you're close to the team, of course, does the team have the perspective that just get in, and I know they've done it before, of course, being in the eighth seed and such, but there really is no favorite in the Western Conference. Maybe you'd say Anaheim or St. Louis, but I mean, to me, the Kings can certainly beat any team out there. Is it just a matter of getting in and really thinking that there's nobody really that much better than they are?
I mean, that's almost verbatim Daryl Sutter's mantra. It's just get in. We're just trying to get in. Once you get in, anything can happen. You look at what they did as an eight seed several years ago. It's kind of misleading to refer to them as an eight seed, mm-hmm. considering that their possession numbers that year were so high. And they were probably due for a little bit of a rebound, in the postseason. But yes, absolutely, just get in. And should they get in, even if they are experiencing injury woes at this point, they still have one of the game's great equalizers in net and Jonathan Quick, too, who has taken teams. When you look at the team, 2 years ago that went to the Western Conference Final and played against the Chicago Blackhawks, lost in 5 games to the eventual Cup champions, you know, that was a Kings team that did not have Willie Mitchell that year, who was injured the entire season. They had to go through the entire season up until the final 2 weeks of the year without Matt Green. There were players, Dustin Brown played through partially torn PCL in the playoffs that year, and Jonathan Quick, you know, practically willed them to series victories over St. Louis, over San Jose in the second round as well, when he was probably the best player on that ice. So there is still that intangible makeup on this team. They do have the experiences of having one gone through that before. They have one of the game's great goaltenders in net. So, yes, absolutely, the team's efforts. Just get in and recalibrate, see what happens from there.
Yesterday it was announced that, as you know, John, it was announced that Kings defenseman Robin Regier was named the Bill Masterton nominee for the LA Kings. He's always been a player that I've admired, and I've followed him since the Calgary Flames days. How important is Robin Regier to this team, both from a leadership perspective and a physicality perspective?
It's the experience that Daryl Sutter is looking for right now at this point. You know, when they had you know, decisions to make about their lineup. And this was a very difficult decision after having acquired Andre Sequeira and with Alec Martinez having recently rejoined the lineup as well. They had to take Braden McNabb out of the lineup, even though when you look from the beginning of the season to where he's at right now, he's clearly the most improved player on this Kings team. And now has 23 points in a terrific first real full season in the NHL. But, you know, he's somebody that hasn't been through the ringer with the Kings before. You know, he's somebody who's never played a playoff game in his career before. So they want the players who have that experience, who are able to make those players around them more prepared, more ready to play in postseason games. That's what Daryl Sutter sees in Robin Regier. Regier's not a player that's going to put up the finest, you know, advanced metrics or anything like that. But in terms of the intangible, in terms of being able in that room before the game to be a group going out there looking to win a playoff game, he adds the focus, he adds the preparation and that type of experience. Again, it's an intangible. We're getting into the, you know, to the airy qualities type here. But the Kings' success has been a mesh of both the qualifiable, the actual numbers and advanced statistics with the intangible. And he certainly, as much as anybody else on the team, provides that intangible.
John Rosen is the LA Kings Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at LA Kings Insider. And the website is lakingsinsider.com. John, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
We'll talk soon. Take care.
Right, take
Let's
care.
Head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
This segment of NHL Midweek is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I was there today. It was packed.
That's good.
Passover, Easter.
Yeah. Passover, Easter, if you still need, give them a call. If you still need a couple last odds and ends to round out your dinners this coming weekend, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out. Big thanks to John Rosen, LA Kings Insider, for joining us to talk about the Los Angeles Kings. We'll spend the next 10 or so minutes talking about the Western Conference playoff race, as with the two straight defeats by the Winnipeg Jets, the Winnipeg Jets having lost their last two games, the playoff race in the Western Conference is getting even tighter. But as we enter today, April the 1st, another 10 days before the end of the regular season, the Winnipeg Jets still do control their own destiny with the five games remaining.
You told me yesterday they didn't, Drew.
I redid the math today.
Yeah, looking at the math, I was like, I think Drew's wrong.
I am wrong, because it's a function of the Flames and the Kings.
They play
playing
the Kings,
each other.
Yeah, they play each other.
Yeah, and so the Jets can go, if the Jets go 5-0, they'll end up at 100 points even. By logic, because the Flames and the Jets play each other, the best the Flames can go is 4-0-1, which would leave them at 100 points and with the tiebreaker. If the Flames go 4-0-1, that means that the best that the Kings can go is 5-0-1, which would put them only at 99 points, and the Jets and the Flames would be the final two playoff spots. So it is certainly possible for all three of those teams to not lose in regulation and the Kings to miss out on the playoffs, which just goes to show you how ridiculous the NHL's Western Conference playoff race has been all season long.
Yeah, because they give out points for showing up.
Pretty much. It's a fairly accurate way of describing it.
Let's not get crazy here. A lot of these records of these teams, when you factor in their full record, is like 2-3 games over 500. So let's not start comparing it to yesteryear with ties and such. But yeah, Drew, it's a very close race, and the NHL likes that. And it's going to be really interesting. When you compare schedules, the Jets probably have the toughest of the five.
Yeah, it's not even really
three,
close.
Excuse me, five games. Well, why don't we go over it?
The Jets, obviously, Vancouver on Saturday, Minnesota, St. Louis, Monday, Tuesday.
It's a back-to-backer. That's a tough one.
Yeah, Colorado on Thursday, and Calgary the following Saturday, the last afternoon of Saturday, April 11th, the last game. It's an afternoon game at home. So those are four playoff teams.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver and Calgary are beatable playoff teams.
You would certainly
everybody's beatable, Drew, but I mean, Vancouver and Calgary, they would be the favorite, I think, for sure, and they'd be the favorite over Colorado on the road anyways, because Colorado's not very good.
Right.
So there's three games that I would consider them the favorite. The other two, they would be the underdog, and they but have to get an upset that, of one, if not two. That doesn't mean they can't win. It just means that that's what, how the odds would, like, I would think the odds would be.
Sure. I would agree with you there. I think at the beginning of the year, the Jets would have said, we can beat Vancouver. We should beat Vancouver and Calgary on home ice. We, you know, then given the way the season's gone, you should certainly say that you have to beat the team that's out of the playoffs, that being Colorado. And then Minnesota, well, you've won in Minnesota already this season, so there's no reason why you can't do it again.
Yeah, but
and
I mean, St. Louis, beat Chicago three times doesn't mean you're going to beat them in five.
Of course, it doesn't. But it's not like they're, you know, it's certainly not a hopeless. Those are two.
Yeah, I mean, any can be anybody. It's just a matter of, yeah.
Right. I agree with you. Calgary, I mean, the difference is, I mean, Calgary's got five games left as well, but three of those five games are against teams that are out currently out of the playoffs. Edmonton, cakewalk. Arizona, not playing for anything. And the Los Angeles Kings, currently out of the playoffs. That's obviously a huge game. Calgary's at St. Louis tomorrow night. Very difficult game mm-hmm. for them, but the way that Calgary's been playing on this road trip mm-hmm. so far, winning on Monday and winning on Tuesday, back-to-back, winning in Nashville Monday and, pardon me, Dallas Monday and Nashville Tuesday.
I mean, and then the last game of the season against the Jets, of course.
That's right. And the last game of the season against the Jets, of course.
That's a tough schedule, too. I mean, the LA-St. Louis compared to St. Louis, Minnesota. Minnesota's obviously been on fire. The difference there is Colorado, Vancouver versus Edmonton, Arizona.
Yeah, and Drew mentioned there's a few big differences in the schedule. Obviously, the game in hand that LA has, Richie. But for me, I mean, everyone's saying, well, yeah, LA has two games against Edmonton. Edmonton's quietly won three games in a row here. LA yeah. is without, as we were talking, well, not only Slava Voynov, but Andre Sekera, who they acquired before the trade deadline. It's not like those are two easy wins. We saw Toronto beat Ottawa. The other night, and we saw Toronto, in fact, beat Tampa Bay last night. So
but,
I'm just saying
that's fair. I think to that point, I think it's even more of a factor as if for Calgary playing Edmonton, right?
Yep.
Because Emotion. That rivalry factor, that Toronto Ottawa rivalry factor, LA Edmonton. I mean, big against kind of a speedy take chance team. I think LA matches up well against them. I think that Calgary, the end, you throw Edmonton, Calgary, anything can happen in one of those games. Edmonton would like nothing better than to spoil their provincial rivals' ability to make the playoffs.
Exactly, and the Jets are going to be breathing a lot easier if Edmonton can upset LA. And you know, and you look at Calgary; they've obviously won a couple games in a row here. They're going up against St. Louis. So I'm just saying. I mean, to me, yeah, LA should probably beat Edmonton, but Calgary going to play a St. Louis team that's been struggling, mm-hmm. they're not playing at their top mm-hmm. level right now.
Where have we seen that and before? Same as last year.
To yeah. me, Richie, this is really going to start to get very interesting with each team's respective next two games, because as we know, the Jets are going to be sitting here now, including today. For 3 days, they didn't practice today. It was scheduled that they weren't going to practice today, but they don't play again until Saturday. And then so you're going to watch other teams play. And as we know, the game on Saturday is a must win. I mean, if the Jets lose that game, the season's over. I think we'd all agree. Or it's very close to being over.
I would agree with you that if they were to lose their third straight game on home ice,
yep.
and this one, the most winnable of those three games, you know, against a Vancouver team that is ahead of you in the standings, but you wouldn't say that the Vancouver Canucks are much better than you are on paper.
No, Jets are a better team than Vancouver.
The Jets are a better team than Vancouver, mm. and regardless of that fact, you know that they know their season is on the line. The Jets, out of the
desperation factor.
Vancouver, I think we'd agree, has pulled away a little bit here. They're not necessarily in for sure, but they've pulled away. To me, it's between Winnipeg, Calgary, and LA.
I agree.
And I don't think I'm saying anything groundbreaking here, but the Jets are the only team of those three teams that has a back-to-back. So it's going to be very tough for the Winnipeg Jets to get 4 points out of the games in Minnesota and St. Louis. Not saying that this team can't do it. This team 100% can do it. It's just going to be a lot easier if they go into that set, that back-to-back set, having the game, the win against the Vancouver Canucks. So, I mean, what is it going to take for the Jets to get in here? If it's not 3-1-1, it's 4-1. And that starts off with a win against Vancouver. And you're absolutely right, Drew and Richie. I mean, the schedule is easier for the LA Kings and the Calgary Flames, but I don't think that this is completely over.
No, as we've seen,
I mean,
I agree.
Who expected Toronto to beat Tampa?
Who
expected Toronto to beat Ottawa?
It's certainly nothing is over when you control your own destiny. And as right. we started off the segment, you know, win out, you're guaranteed a playoff spot.
The Colorado Avalanche are going to be able to sit there. And they have five games left against San Jose, Anaheim, LA, Nashville, Winnipeg. And they're going to try to win every single one of those games.
Sure.
Because they're not in a position that they're in a bottom three or bottom five team. So they're going to try to upset some teams. And
Don't think that the San Jose Sharks in game 82 of the season on Saturday, April 11th, wouldn't love to knock the Los Angeles Kings out of the playoffs? Wouldn't that be ironic, given the way the, you know, sort of everything coming full circle almost with the Kings being the
Well, it might happen because it's not in the playoffs.
That's why I think, guys, the whole notion of tanking is completely absurd. Not to mention the fact
that
there's a draft. Well, if Toronto's tanking, why did they win last night?
Well, players don't tank, but organizations tank.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I meant these games. Like, you can't just say, well, this team isn't going to
I heard Tim Murray called the Jets for Pavlik after he let in the goal from Jackman. That's the kind of guy we want on our team, he said.
they found Anders Lindback instead.
Yeah.
They went lower on the goaltending totem pole.
And he's right. Players don't tank. We've said that, right? The organizations put themselves in the position to not succeed.
And these games are going
to
be close. And these guys, you don't think some of the guys that have been having tough years want to pad their stats? A guy like Ryan O'Reilly's not going to try to score a goal against these Kings guys that are defending Stanley Cup champions. These guys are trying to finish off their season. They have pride. At the end of the day, professional athletes, hockey players, are no different. Yeah. They have pride, and so I'm just saying, I mean, you look at the schedules, and I wouldn't necessarily say that there's that much of an advantage, because at the end of the day, they have to win those games.
That's fair. I can accept that. After tomorrow night, when the Jets are idle and the Kings and the Flames both play, every time the Jets are in action, the Flames and the Kings will be in action as well. So there will be a ton of scoreboard watching to do. Not much to do tonight, in fact. It's an easy night. You can, you know, pretty much listen to us, and then you don't have to pay any attention to the out-of-town scoreboard. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to TSN 1290 and NHL Midweek. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, DJ Michael Remus. Really brings up the time that we went to a party and Remus was pretending. Actually, he was actually being the DJ at the party. It's not a very good DJ.
Did you say spinning, Drew?
I didn't say spinning, but he was attempting to spin when he was DJ Remus that night. Did you have a funky DJ name, Reem?
Oh, I was spinning, Drew.
You were spinning?
Not that kind.
Yeah, I know. You were just, you know, that was from too much alcohol, I think, is why you were spinning there.
I never said that.
Yeah, I did. I just said it right there. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Coming up in May, Jim Brewer, May 14th through May 16th, and just announced some more shows for Sean Wayans. The first batch of shows sold out so quickly that two more shows have been added. Tickets available right now for those two more shows to see Sean Wayans, but they certainly won't last long. So get them at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Our buddy Hart saw Darren Rose on the weekend.
That's right.
Said it was really good, and he said he was treated very well at Rumors. They did a nice job there, and he's a funny guy. And we're looking.
Darren Rose is a funny guy, or
a funny guy.
They're both funny guys.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Good to know.
Forward to Jim Brewer. I have to still get tickets. I'm hoping that I can get a couple.
You can. You just go to rumorscomedyclub.com. You don't even need to ask anybody. You can just go right online. You can even do it while you're sitting here on air. You could buy two tickets.
I don't have a credit card. I think I've maxed out my credit card. It's been a rough month.
Let's talk about the Eastern Conference playoff race. It seemed like, you know, last week, maybe 10 days ago, the Ottawa Senators were going to be in the driver's seat in the Eastern Conference.
Which of the times was it that you wrote off the Bruins again? I just want to make sure
this would have been the third time I wrote off the Bruins, if I'm not mistaken.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah, you want to, you know, I understand.
Remus, how many is it? Six? Seven times
No,
now?
No. It's only three times I've written them off so far.
Drew, I was telling you 3 weeks ago when Ottawa was winning all those games that they were in it, and you said, no, they're going to start losing. The Hamburglers are going to stop eating as many hamburgers. They're not going to get all those wins. And so I'm pulling for Ottawa because it's a Canadian team, and I have some family in Ottawa, but I mean, the Boston Bruins have won three games in a row here, and they're starting to pull away a little bit.
Senators have a game in hand. They're technically really more so like 4 points behind because they do not have the tiebreaker, so they do need to completely overtake Boston. You know, you look at that Eastern Conference race, and With last night's loss by the Florida Panthers to Boston, you can pretty much put an end to their whatever faint dreams of playoff hopes they had in South Florida.
This is Boston's win to lose here, guys. They have an easier schedule than Senators do. And maybe getting Brett Connolly back, and I think I've seen the Bruins play. They're looking pretty good to me. I mean, I know you guys don't love them, but they're looking like a tough force here, and they're playing a little bit more of their style of play. Bigger, having Krejci back in there obviously is a factor.
Sure.
I wouldn't want to play the Bruins, especially matchup-wise, because you know a lot of the teams in the East are so fast and skilled, but they have trouble playing that physical game sometimes, and that size game. It's kind of like L.A. I mean, L.A. has a lot more physical teams in the West to deal with, but that same thing, you know, you get in there and say you're a faster, skilled team, you have to play against an L.A. in the West, similar kind of in the East. Anybody's got to play Boston. I mean, and the Habs right now would play Boston, which would be awesome. But the Habs or the
Rangers would play Boston right now.
Sorry, the Rangers. But I mean,
either way, Boston, New York, or Boston, Montreal.
But I don't think the Rangers or the Habs want to play Boston. And I think Washington's a good team too, so they're the alternative, and that's why it's such an open race. But it's the way the style of play that Boston employs, I think, will be difficult to handle. Doesn't mean that they're certainly beatable, but difficult to handle. And I think just how physical they are. This is a huge factor.
I agree with you, Richie. And if you think for a second that the Boston Bruins won't have a chip on their shoulder going into the first round of the playoffs, whether they play the New York Rangers or whoever they play, you're mistaken, because this team has gone through a lot this year. And you had Charlie Jacobs, who's, of course, the son of Charlie Jacobs, right?
He's a little bit of a
son of Jeremy Jacobs.
Yeah.
We played the comments on the show, and he was saying that, you know, he wasn't really happy with the way the team was playing. And
well, they were talking about the fact that, you know, they're talking about Peter Chiarelli's job being on the line if they were to miss the playoffs. I mean, ridiculous. But they were talking about it. Like it was almost a foregone conclusion.
Well, it's pretty ridiculous. It's not like the Boston Bruins, it's very close, as we've talked about, in both conferences. So it's not like the Boston Bruins are finishing dead last in the conference or anything like that. In fact, as Richie mentioned, they're in the driver's seat right now to make the playoffs. And I think Peter Chiarelli's done a great job as GM, and I really like Claude Julien as a coach. I think he gets a lot out of his players. And I agree with Richie in his point about how they're playing right now. I mean, this team has had tons of injuries earlier on the season, and they lost Johnny Boychuk, and it was one thing after another, and they've managed to kind of scratch and claw and stick around in the playoff race. And do you want to play a team that has Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci up front and Zdeno Chara? And Tuukka Rask made a beautiful save last night. He's starting to play better now.
Yeah, and Spooner and Pastrnak are both good. Like, both good young players.
Pastrnak, of course, is just drafted this year. He's 18.
He's a talented player. And sure, I had some questions about depth on the back end and some injuries problems there. But I don't know. They only have Connolly. And you look at their top 12, it's pretty good. I don't know. I wouldn't want to play the Bruins.
No, I don't think anybody does want to play the Bruins. Yeah. Right now, if you're looking at, I mean, Detroit's scuffling right now, and they're not sure about what their goaltending situation is going to be like entering into the playoffs. They've given Peter Mrazek the opportunity, and he had that good game on Saturday, and then I believe they went back to him on Sunday, and he got pulled on Sunday. So Detroit's goaltending is sort of up in the air.
You know, I want to say something on that topic. I know
Please.
Jimmy Howard's had a tough year, and Peter Mrazek's really had to come in there, Richie. To me, I go back to kind of what the Red Wings needed at the trade deadline, and they went out and they got Marek Zdlicky, who's well past his prime. And to me, that's
been pretty good for them, though.
Maybe offensively, he's still, to me, what they needed was they needed a stay-at-home defenseman like a Robin Regier did for L.A. a few years back. That's what they needed. And I know a lot of the focus has been on Jimmy Howard. To me, that defense is a little top-heavy. I like Danny DeKeyser. I like Nicholas Cronwall. He's a good two-way defenseman. But to me, that defense there has to be a little bit of blame there. And I'm not saying that, you know, Kenny Holland doesn't know what he was doing, but to me, that's kind of what they needed, and I know all the blame has been on Jimmy Howard.
Nobody's really physical in that forward group, though, is he? I mean, Zetterberg is certainly willing to engage in contact and won't back down, and Applicator will go to the net. But a lot of the guys, it's a skill team, right?
Yep.
You know, Cleary, but Cleary doesn't move that well. It's the identity of the squad, and I see your point for sure in terms of that physicality, but that's never been their game. You went back to Constantino, really, for that big physical defenseman that they have, but he could skate, too. You know?
Yep.
So you change the dynamic of your team. See, Regier fits so much better into LA because it's a slower team that plays a big, tough style.
But I just
think, but I like, see I certainly see a concern with their defense.
Right. I they give up too many chances, and again, Jimmy Howard, his job is to stop the puck. I know that, but I just think it's a little bit unfair. I always kind of stick up for the goalies because I think you know, as we know, for example, everyone likes to, you know, look at the goals against average and all that, but that's a team stat. I mean, you can't always.
Sure.
Andrei Pavlik wasn't the reason why they lost the game. Sometimes the goalie doesn't play well, and you could really single him out. And I just, watching the Detroit Red Wings this year, I don't think all of their troubles are necessarily just goaltending. And by the way, I still think Detroit's going to be dangerous in the playoffs. I think they've been on a little slide here. They've only won 3 of their last 10. But this is still a team. You know, Richie's right. This is a skilled team, and when they can score 4 or 5 goals a game. In this day and age, you want to see more teams that play like the Detroit Red Wings, Rich, because they open it up. And they have 3 good scoring lines. You know, all these guys like Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Tatar and Riley Sheahan, who's injured right now, but all these guys that came up through Grand Rapids. I mean, these guys have skill.
And the other thing is, Ezzy, it's a factor. I mean, it's like Anaheim. Anaheim sat in first place in the Pacific Division for the whole second half of the year with nothing to play for. Nothing. Like, Detroit's been locked into the third spot in the Atlantic Division for, what, 2 months?
They are.
It's hard to get motivated.
They're only 2 points ahead of Boston.
With a game in hand.
With a game in hand. Which is,
and the tiebreaker.
It's similar to what you saw with the Blackhawks. When they,
yeah,
you
know, like,
the Minnesota Wild leapfrogged the Blackhawks, and the Blackhawks said, oh, you know, we probably don't want to actually be in the wild card, although it doesn't really matter too terribly. So let's win our next two games and get back to being, you know, the third in the Central Division.
Yeah, I mean, they put in a position where, at the end of the, you know, you put in a position where there's no incentive. I mean, sure, you want to play well, but if you play well the last 10 games of the season, you're going to feel better about yourself than the 10 games before.
I don't think that any teams that are clearly in playoff spots, I don't read too much into struggles at this point in time. What I would look into are when there's question marks, and there are question marks about Detroit's goaltending, because they don't really have anybody, they don't know who their goaltender would be if they started the playoffs today. So that would just be a bit of a concern that I would look to, you know, towards, you know, seeing what the answer is going to be from the Detroit Red Wings perspective. But are the Red Wings going to be an easy out because they've only won 3 of their last 10? I think certainly not, because they still have the talent that got them to where they are in the first place.
And we didn't even mention, I mean, Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg, again, quietly, I mean, it's always the leaders of a team. You talk about the LA Kings, Richie, it's Drew Doughty, it's Anje Kopitar. These guys just quietly go about their business and are having good seasons. Is it their best year ever? No, of course not. These guys are older now, but these guys really set the pace for this team. A guy like Justin Abdelkader plays with Henrik Zetterberg. Why is he able to do some of the things that he does? Because Henrik Zetterberg creates so much space for him. So this Detroit Red Wings team, I think you got to give them a lot of credit here for the way they've played this year. And it's a bit of a slump here, but they're going to make the playoffs. They're no danger of missing the playoffs.
No,
that's for sure.
They're certainly not in danger of that. I mean, they're 5 points up on Ottawa, but with, you know, they have the same number of games. So it's on, you know, Ottawa's not going to go on that kind of run. Ottawa obviously scuffling since they finally did leave. They got over top of Boston to get into the playoffs, and they had that home game against the Rangers where they got absolutely demolished. And ever since then, they've sort of been scuffling and have now fallen behind Boston by 3 points again.
And Drew, I know, you know, things can change here, but if you talk about storylines, I know we said Montreal was probably going to play Washington if the playoffs started today. You look at Detroit playing Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay getting swept in the first round by Montreal. That's a storyline, isn't it? Stevie Yzerman facing his old team.
Sure.
Tampa Bay trying to prove that they can get to the second round of the playoffs, because really, in the last 3 years, really, they've been primarily a regular season team. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's not a good matchup for Tampa Bay.
I'm not sure about that. Tampa Bay looks to me, the way they have manhandled the Canadiens this year, didn't they win all 5 games against the Habs this season? To me, Tampa Bay looks like a very dangerous team.
No,
but
I picked the Tampa Bay Lightning to win the Cup this year. So I'm not saying that I don't like Tampa Bay. I'm just saying that, to me, I mean, there are no easy first-round matchups,
no,
guys.
I mean,
that doesn't exist anymore.
You're absolutely right about that. Let's head to break, because we're going to start talking on the other side about Tampa Bay. They've got some defensive injuries that are going to carry into the playoffs. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. First on Saturday was Ezzy's insistence that we play wrestling theme songs in honor of WrestleMania. And now, because you guys spent some time in Las Vegas and got to enjoy the fun that is the clubs in Las Vegas. All we're playing is EDM. Is that how it's going to be, at least for the next little while? Richard, you've forgotten your Bruce Springsteen roots so quickly. It's really troubling.
Still have one segment at the end of the show.
Oh, so you think that should be a spring? That's not going to be Bruce Springsteen does Avicii or anything like that?
Avicii was playing.
Yeah? Did you go see him?
No.
Okay.
Is Avicii a guy? Or a
so, like, yeah.
Avicii
like, so
is a Swedish DJ, I believe.
Remus, pop on here for a second. So, like, songs, like, Remus, you're not picking exactly the right songs. We need to kind of need the Andy Samberg video, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe that clip can be the next one you play. We'll play Andy Samberg into the next break, and we can earn to the next segment, and we can talk about how the songs are broken down that way.
Rich, you need to chill.
Yeah, you really do need to chill. Rare is the day that I agree with Ezra Ginsberg, but you need to chill. Well, Penguins. Penguins.
April Fools.
Yeah, April Fools. Yeah. If you were only kidding, I wish.
Oh, yeah, that's why we're playing this music, because it's April Fools.
Right, yeah, sure. Let's go with that story. Pittsburgh Penguins, they lose Chris Letang indefinitely. He's out with a concussion after he gets hit by Shane Doan. That happened, I believe, a couple days ago. Maybe Saturday when the Coyotes and the Penguins played in the afternoon.
They played on Saturday afternoon, and it was I think, in the first or second period I was watching the game.
Yeah, with about 5 minutes to go in the second period is when Doan shoved Letang, and he hit the boards. Obviously, Chris Letang has had some injury issues and some health concerns over the last couple of years. Suffered a stroke last season. Was that last season? Two seasons?
It was last
now?
Season, yeah.
Last season. You know, and we wish him the best in the course of his recovery. How serious of an injury is it to the Penguins and their Stanley Cup chances if he's not able to be at full strength for the upcoming NHL playoffs?
Well, it's huge. I mean, their defense isn't great anyways. And he's their best defenseman. Offensively and overall, I think I don't see how they're going to make a big run. I mean, you never know with Crosby and Malkin, but I don't see how they make a big run without this guy. He's key. You know, he's important on the power play. He's important in transition. He's going to play big minutes. That's a huge loss, Ezzy. I don't know how you replace him.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. This Penguins team, I'm not too sure if this Penguins team is going to go quietly in the first round or if they're going to surprise us. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Crosby and Malkin have had their own injury problems. Crosby's back, of course. But, you know, you look at Chris Letang, and he's quietly had a 54-point season, which is up there as far as defensemen go. It's probably top five, if not top ten. And, you know, he helps their transition game. He's a great skater, and he's gotten better defensively.
Top five.
In earlier in his career, he was having issues with the defensive side of his game. He was pinching too much and all that, Rich. But this Penguins team is going to need him, especially if they're going to go deep. And you hope that he's going to be back sooner rather than later. But, you know, he's important. He's very important. And, you know, a guy like Derek Pouliot hasn't really stepped up his game as much as they would have liked. And that's one of the reasons why they went out and they traded for Ben Lovejoy. They got Ben Lovejoy back from the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. And he's a good defenseman. I really like him. But, no, I mean, especially when you're talking about some of the more skilled teams in the Eastern Conference, you need Letang back there. And, again, he's rebounded from injuries before, so you hope that he's going to be back soon. But, you know, I don't see them going on an extended playoff run without him.
Penguins, you know, just to highlight their defensive problems and their how thin they are on D, they're playing with five defensemen tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers.
Well, it's apparently an ongoing plan. That's what I read.
That's apparently it. And in a pinch, if they needed somebody, apparently Daniel Winnick can go back and play defense.
Well, a pinch or not, Drew, they're not good enough as currently constructed to win multiple playoff rounds, as far as I'm concerned. There's certainly a question as to whether or not they could do that with Chris Letang in the lineup, but you're missing 25 and a half minutes of regular season ice time. That's not to say that he wouldn't play more in the playoffs when the games obviously are more important.
Not to mention Christian Ehrhoff, who's also out of the lineup for the Penguins.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, those are the two sort of horses that they had been...
Well, Ehrhoff can't defend at all.
He's offensive, but he was important to the team.
Ehrhoff can't defend. He helps transitions. You know, he's good offensively. Letang certainly, you know, is not the best defender in the world, but he certainly competes, mm-hmm. which Ehrhoff doesn't necessarily compete defensively as far as I'm concerned. And Letang is better offensively than Ehrhoff. It's a huge loss.
And Olimata, of course, being out of the lineup for a while now.
Absolutely.
So there was another, you know, 20-plus minute guy who is really coming to his own. So it's tough times in Pittsburgh as they enter into the playoffs and have many questions on their back end. Moving to Tampa Bay, another team that's got some questions on their back end. They lose defenseman Jason Garrison for 3 to 4 weeks with an upper body injury, and they lose Andre Suster as well for 1 to 2 weeks with an upper body injury. Suster, if it's only a week, not a big deal. He's back in time for the playoffs. Garrison, you're going to be missing at least probably the entire first round if you're out for up to a month at this point in time.
And Coburn's out.
Yeah, Braden Coburn, who they acquired from the Flyers, paid a hefty price to get at the trade deadline, also out of the lineup for the Lightning. So they have defensive issues as well.
Yeah, and Andre Schuster's had a nice year here for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's a player maybe that a lot of fans don't know about. He's in his second year with the Lightning, but he's one of the reasons why the Tampa Bay Lightning were able to trade Radko Gudas before the trade deadline, because Schuster, that is a really big boy, 6'7".
And he was out of the lineup anyways all year.
And Jason Garrison, has really...
Gudas was out of the lineup all year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Schuster, Gudas. Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no, you're right, Drew. But the Tampa Bay Lightning, Victor Hedman had his own injuries problems. He left the game, and he's healthy.
Day-to-day, I believe, is the...
Saturday, they're targeting for his return.
Yeah, he's coming back Saturday. So it doesn't look like that's too serious. So for the Tampa Bay Lightning, this is a team that, as we mentioned last segment, they want to get back and winning hockey rounds. And last year they were embarrassed, in my opinion, by the Montreal Canadiens. They obviously didn't have Ben Bishop as their starting goalie, but this was a team that had aspirations beyond the first round. So they're going to miss Jason Garrison. He's good on the power play, and he's pretty underrated defensively, in my opinion. He can move the puck nicely. So, they can probably get through the first round without him. But again, it's tough when you start talking about, it seems like, top six, and especially when you're talking about veteran guys like Garrison. But when you lose Braden Coburn, who you kind of got for that physical element, talking about kind of like the Robin Regier type of defenseman, that's what Braden Coburn is. And then you lose Andre Schuster, it might be for a week. These add up.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have them all out, obviously. I think one of the things is you look at the way that they apportion their ice time, and they balance it out quite well, especially with the depth they have on the back end when healthy, Ezzy.
Yep.
I think that'll serve them well in the playoffs because their guys won't be as tired. Like, Hedman is playing 22 minutes a night, 22 and a half with 57 games played. If he's back and ready to go, you can log him 26, 27, I think, fairly easily. So some of those minutes will be eaten up by the top players playing more. But if you have multiple injuries on the back end, it's going to be a concern because their game is a quick game. And... But by that, I mean the puck is out of their zone and up on their forward sticks, and they have a lot of speed. But if you have trouble getting the puck out of your own zone, then those forwards are on an island. So it's going to be important.
Moving to Los Angeles, where we spoke about it briefly with John Rosen earlier in the program, Andre Sequeira out of the lineup for the Los Angeles Kings. They acquired him from Carolina at the deadline. Mm-hmm. And Sequeira was brought in to sort of fill the role that they've been missing all season long with Slava Voynov having his legal issues.
Yeah, you have Alec Martinez back, which is important because before you had no Voynov and no Martinez. Yeah, it's Sequeira in there. Certainly he's an improvement over what they had. But I think Martinez is a... Being back in the lineup allows them to have a little bit more flexibility. I think it's an important injury, Drew. I mean, you can't play Drew Doughty much more than you already have. I don't think it's insurmountable in regards to their making the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree, Rich. And I think I felt like a lot of people didn't really know who Alec Martinez was. He obviously got the game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. He's a really good defenseman. And Slava Voynov is a better defenseman than Alec Martinez, but Alec Martinez isn't that far behind. Different type of defenseman. He's not as physical and can't play as many minutes, perhaps, as Slava Voynov. But he's an important part of this team, not just the Stanley Cup winning goal, but just overall. He can play in the top six, and they'll be fine. Braden McNabb is not ideally who you'd want in there, but he's actually done quite a bit better than I thought he was going to do. Early last year, they put him in, and he was a little bit shaky, but he's done a decent job there playing with Matt Green. So the LA Kings should be okay. I mean, if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, you're hoping the LA Kings really go into the tank here so you can make the playoffs.
Sure.
But the LA Kings, as we know, Richie talks about minute-munching defensemen. Drew Doughty, with the exception of maybe Ryan Suter, plays the most minutes of any defenseman in the NHL. So he's on the ice half the game with Jake Muzzin a lot of the time. So, they'll probably be okay. But again, once you get into the playoffs, and if these guys aren't sure how long Sakara exactly is going to be out, but you hope that it's not too long, because then you start to need these veteran players who were a big part of your success earlier in the season. And Sakara has been very good for them.
Drew Doughty's actually playing more than Suter this year. That's how much he's been playing.
Sure. One other injury, and the St. Louis Blues report, he's going to be back in time for the playoffs. That's Vladimir Tarasenko.
Well, it's huge because he's a weapon that they have, and they have a lot of guys who can, you know, they're a combination offense team, meaning that they create offense off cycle, off size and off the boards. Transition-wise, they're not as dangerous, but Tarasenko is one of the best transition scorers in the National Hockey League. He can beat you off the rush, whether it be on transition or just off the breakout. He can make something out of nothing, as he. And if you look at their team, you know, they're not the fastest squad, and he gives them that element of speed and that quick strike ability. So his return is paramount to whether or not they can make a run, never mind, in my opinion, their questionable goaltending that won't be changed before the playoffs begin.
Do you think it matters for the Blues' success? Sort of a two-part question. One, home ice advantage if they do play the Blackhawks. And two, right now they could overtake.
It's all about goaltending, Drew.
It's just about, doesn't matter where they play, it's all about the goaltending for them.
That's all it is.
I mean, they still could overtake Nashville. They have two games in hand on the Predators and are 4 points back.
Doesn't matter
back.
Who they play. LA, Calgary,
Winnipeg.
If they don't have a goaltending, they're going to lose to all three of them. I think Calgary the least of those three, but you're not going to have goaltending. It's not going to matter. Brian Elliott has got to be able to stop pucks, and if it's not him, frankly, I would go with Jake Allen. But he doesn't inspire confidence right now either because of the unknown. I mean, who knows what he'll do?
And this is a big, big year for the St. Louis Blues because, as you guys know, Ken Hitchcock's in the last year of his contract. So, I mean, if the St. Louis Blues don't get out of the first round or maybe even the second round, I mean, are you looking at going in a different direction? Because it's a very talented team, but they've had a similar group here. So you're talking about, you know, guys like David Backes and Alexander Steen and TJ Oshie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And obviously you've brought in some
all good players.
You know, Yuri Laterra is a guy that, you know, they brought in, and there's new players and all that. But do you look at maybe a different direction? Because as we know, Ken Hitchcock likes the defensive style of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you need to maybe change it up? Because as we saw, Peter Laviolette replaces Barry Trotz. And not to mention Barry Trotz has really got Washington going pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a big year for the team.
Well, and Tarasenko is that sort of difference-maker offensive weapon that the Blues haven't really been able to rely on. You know, seventh in the league right now in scoring, and he was right up at the top for the majority of the season. So, you don't get him if he's not back or if he's not healthy for the playoffs. It's going to be a difficult situation for the Blues. Let's head to break. When we come back, 1 month ago was the NHL trade deadline. We'll look back and see which of the players traded then have had the most impact. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Who is this DJ, gentlemen?
Doesn't matter, they're all the same.
Yeah, you have no idea, do you guys? I'm impressed you even remember. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. 1 month ago, tomorrow, was the NHL trade deadline, usually one of the most hyped-up events on the NHL's calendar. So figured this is about the time where we can look back and see which of the players traded at the deadline and or in and around the deadline have had some significant impact for their team.
But Drew, when will the base drop?
What? I assume it's some sort of DJ thing.
Yeah.
Is that when everybody goes crazy?
Yeah.
When the bass drops, everybody starts farting it up even more? Things I wish I didn't know is for 100, Alex. Anyways, we'll talk about some of the other players besides the players the Jets have acquired because we've talked about them nonstop. Let's start in Detroit, where they acquired two players in and around the deadline, Marek Zdlicki and Eric Cole. What sort of impact have those two guys had on the Red Wings roster, to your mind?
Well, hopefully it wouldn't be to somebody else's mind. But, you know, Drew, I think Zdlicki has helped add a right-side defenseman, add an offensive element. They've probably been pretty pleased with him overall. You know, he fits into what they want to do as the puck movement, and he's not going to be the most physical. They don't need him to be. They don't want him to be. You know, Eric Cole, I think, has left a little bit more to be desired from Mike Babcock. But I think really his payoff We'll be in the playoffs. The game will get a little bit more physical, and we talked about that's not their game, and Cole can skate. But, you know, going to the net on a, as a forward in the playoffs is obviously very important. I think that'll be a little bit more important in the playoffs, whereas defenseman, his goal is just to get that puck out of the way, and he's small and not change his game in terms of Zielicki. But Cole is going to be have to drive the net and create some space for the skilled Detroit Red Wings line mates that he has.
Yeah, and we talked about it at the trade deadline, Richie. Eric Cole's kind of replacing the role that Todd Bertuzzi was playing with the Detroit Red Wings over the years, and his track record mm-hmm. speaks for itself. He was having a good year with the Dallas Stars, 18 goals, and he's got 6 points in 11 games with the Detroit Red Wings. We should mention Eric Cole's injured right now. He's supposed to come back on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Zielicki, you guys know how I feel about Zielicki. I mean, he'll put up the points, but I don't like how he plays defensively, and I didn't think the Devils should have signed him, but the guy can move the puck, and you put him out there on the power play, as Rich mentioned, and with a skilled team, it's been working. He's been putting up the points. And again, you know, the Detroit Red Wings are going to rely heavily on some of the younger players that are really supplementing Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg. You know, we've talked about the Justin Abdelkaders and the Thomas Tatars. Tons of skill on that team, but I think those trades are really turning out exactly how we thought they were going to turn out.
Yeah, I think so. As you're talking about seasoned veterans, you know, guys have 10 years in the league or yep. more. You know what you're getting. Nothing's really going to change.
In Nashville, they acquired both Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Franzen obviously returning. I guess Santarelli returning to Nashville, too. That's where he was drafted.
This is true.
Franzen has worked out a lot better than Santarelli has so far.
Well, you know, I haven't seen him play enough in Nashville to really comment, Drew.
Really 3 points in 20 games.
But you're talking about a Nashville team that they're going for the run in the playoffs. So
I know, but he's also been healthy scratched in Nashville since he got there as well.
I didn't see the need for Franzen as much as I saw the need for another forward. So, and I didn't think Santarelli was necessarily that guy. So I kind of questioned the trade at the time, and I'll continue to have that to feel that way in terms of kind of not necessarily understanding what they were trying to do there. I understood it, just didn't agree with it. So, again, we'll see what happens in the playoffs. Nashville's been, I mean, we talked about Detroit kind of being in that spot. Zielicki and Cole at least are getting acclimated to a Detroit Red Wings organization they haven't been a part of before. In Nashville, Franzen and Santarelli, as you said, Drew, have both been there before. So it's kind of like, okay, let's start the playoffs here. And I know the team struggled, of course, but let's start the playoffs here and see if it really matters.
Yeah, and the Nashville Predators really have kind of been playing .500 over the last couple months because, as we know, they got out to that amazing start and they were in first place and they've fallen off a little bit, but they're still mm-hmm. only 2 points behind the Anaheim Ducks. For the President's Trophy, which is unbelievable. But as Richie mentioned, those trades were made for the playoffs.
Yeah.
This team was already in a playoff spot. You know, you bring in Cody Franzen, who wasn't really part of the future in Toronto as a UFA, right shot defenseman, good. But now he's buried behind Shea Weber and Roman Josi, who play a lot of hockey. They always have for the Nashville Predators. Well, Josi's only in his third year now, but Shea Weber has been for years. So I think, again, it's tough to kind of evaluate those two moves a little bit more so than others. But I think, you know, the moves, even though they might not have been exactly what they needed, because we've talked about this, the Nashville Predators, where's their weakness? It's up the middle. They're small.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like Santarelli, really, he was just brought in to play a third-line, fourth-line role. And I know you mentioned he was a healthy scratch, but to me, that's not anything against Mike Santarelli. I think he's really made a decent career out of kind of, if you want to say, defying the odds, because remember he came in Winnipeg and not what much was expected mm-hmm. of him, and he played pretty well. But so I think that those moves maybe haven't been as impressive as others, but I wouldn't be surprised if those two guys played a big role in the playoffs for Nashville.
Two players we saw on Sunday as the Antoine Vermette and Kimmo Timonen of the Chicago Blackhawks. What did you think of their impact on the Blackhawks so far?
I thought Kimmo Timonen looked a little slow, and that's to be expected. I mean, he doesn't play all year, Richie, with Philly, and now he's basically being expected to play top 4 minutes for the Chicago Blackhawks. And why is that the case? Well, they miss guys like Nick Leddy on the back end. Johnny Oduya struggled at times. I thought Nicholas Jarmerson, aside from Duncan Keith, looked like their best defenseman. But I think, you know, I understand why the move was made by Stan Bowman. Antoine Vermette has really struggled. I don't think he's scored a goal yet since coming over from Chicago. I might be wrong about that, but when we previewed the Jets-Chicago game, he still hadn't scored a goal, and I only think they've played one game since then. So Antoine Vermette has struggled a little bit. But again, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks all year have kind of, you know, they've yo-yoed Brad Richards around from the second and third line. They really haven't, they still don't have that second line center, you know, that really, if you think about it, time after time, you saw the Anaheim Ducks do this with Ryan Kessler in the offseason. You saw the Dallas Stars do it with Jason Spezza in the offseason. You need to have that 1-2 punch down the middle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brad Richards, you got to give him credit. He's done a nice job here. He's not as fast as he used to be, but he's still an effective player.
He's got the hands still.
But to me, Antoine Vermette, we still haven't really seen enough out of him. You know, he's got 2 or 3 points since coming over. So, really, we thought that move was going to have probably the biggest impact because we heard about it for months on the TSN trade tracker. You know, Antoine Vermette's in play. Mm-hmm. But again, I think when the playoffs start, I wouldn't be surprised if Antoine Vermette has a key role for the Chicago Blackhawks, especially with Patrick Kane out.
Blackhawks, Antoine Vermette, 3 assists in the 13 games he's played for the Hawks since coming over from the Arizona Coyotes. Richie, Keith Yandle, you saw him last night for the Rangers. What did you think of his game?
I was impressed with his game, Drew. I thought he played a really controlled game for Keith Yandle. And I know he was victimized on the first goal and he lost his stick against the fourth line. Notwithstanding that play, Drew, I was quite impressed. I thought he played... You know, he's a guy who's always been able to move the puck. Always, he's a smart offensive player, very good on the power play. I know the Rangers wanted to shoot more. I thought he moved the puck real nicely yesterday on the power play and was able to kind of demonstrate a very good chemistry with Ryan McDonough on the back end on the man advantage. But overall, you know, you watch his game and sure, he's supported by better teammates in New York. There's no doubt about that. And some good speed. But I thought he didn't take as many unnecessary chances up the ice. I thought he defended hard. Not necessarily the best defenseman you're ever going to see, but I thought his game has matured really since coming from New York, from Arizona to New York. So I'm not sure if that's a result of Vigneault, a result of Alf Samuelson and the familiarity he had with Samuelson in Arizona. And maybe it's the fact that he's slotted in at a lower spot there. That's probably a factor, if not a significant factor. But I was impressed with him, and that team's good.
Really one good. Last player, Zdeněk Mihalák, St. Louis Blues. We've seen him a few times as I think the Jets are obligated to play the Blues every third game.
I say really as a surprise there. I mean, Zdeněk Mihalák has shown you he's not going to be a great skater. He's not going to be a dynamic offensive player. He plays a hard game. He's hard to play against. He works hard. He keeps it simple. And, you know, he's slotting him behind in the playoffs with Shattenkirk and Pietrangelo. Makes him a real nice third pairing guy. You have to elevate him. He's able to do it, but your team does take a hit offensively, puck moving wise.
Right, and you're not going to get tons of goals from Zdeněk Mihalák, right. But the St. Louis Blues, we talked about it. The big issue with them right now is what's happening with the goaltending situation because Brian Elliott has struggled big time. He's the veteran, and as Richie mentioned, would any of us be surprised if they go with Jake Allen when it's game one of the first round? I wouldn't be because... I mean, Ken Hitchcock, we know, he likes the defensive style of hockey, and not only does he like the defensive style of hockey, he's not afraid to really ride his goaltender, and he expects really good goaltending. That whole system, Richie, doesn't work if you don't have the goaltending.
I agree.
When we come back, is your hockey helmet safe enough? We'll talk to the doctor in charge of the Virginia Tech study that is bringing a lot of concern to people regarding their hockey helmet. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment of NHL Midweek this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online or at knottautocorp.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Dr. Stefan Duma, the head of the Virginia Tech Department of Biomedical Engineering and Mechanics. Dr. Duma, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. And I can say, assuredly, you are the smartest guest we've ever had on this program.
Well, I appreciate that. Happy to join you.
Doctor, obviously we brought you on to talk about the research that you're doing at Virginia Tech in regards to hockey helmets, coming out with a study earlier this week that really didn't speak a lot or didn't say a lot of good things about the safety and the concussion prevention provided by the hockey helmets that most people are wearing. First of all, can you sort of give us an overview of what the study is and what you're attempting to find out in the course of the study?
Certainly. We took 3 years and we looked at how hockey players experience head impacts, whether they hit each other or the ice or the boards, and we recreated a system to mimic those impacts in the laboratory. And basically what we're looking at is how well the helmets cushion the impact and slow down the head acceleration so you lower risk. Now, it's important to note that hockey helmets are safe in terms of design for skull fracture, and the standards and the company's done a very good job of effectively eliminating skull fractures. So what we're talking about is that next level of concussion, and how do we reduce that risk?
Dr. Duma, I guess a two-part question for you. Before you started this study, I guess, and based on the results that you found, how surprised are you at the results that were uncovered over the course of the study? And second part of the question, how concerned should parents of especially young hockey players be with these findings?
In a general sense, we were not surprised. You know, hockey helmets are on the small side of helmets. It's a small offset. And you basically need a certain amount of padding to modulate the energy and lower the head acceleration. So in a general sense, we weren't surprised. And I think most people that have tested helmets, you know, would concur with that. In terms of parents, you know, nothing's changed from last week and this week. I think what people need to realize is that hockey helmets are designed to prevent skull fractures, and they've done a good job at that. What we're trying to do is push the envelope and go to the next layer, which is how do we reduce concussion risk? You'll never eliminate it. It's always there, even with the best equipment. But we can do a better job, and we're hoping for some improved designs to come out.
Is there any concern? I think probably the answer is no, but just want to ask you, Doctor, is there any concern that, you know, the more equipment and the players may feel a little bit more invincible by wearing these things and maybe put themselves in compromising positions?
That's an excellent point, and it's very important. We always talk about the three layers of protection. The first is you have to have the right rules. The league has to enforce the right rules and can't let the players use their head as a weapon. The second is the coaches have to teach the right technique. And then the third layer is the helmet. So there will be head impacts. You will fall. You will hit the ice. In that case, you want to have the best equipment you can. But you're absolutely right. You have to have these things work together, the rules, the coaching, and then the equipment.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Dr. Stefan Duma. He's the head of the Virginia Tech Department of Biomedical Engineering and Mechanics. He's the author of the Virginia Tech Helmet Rating Study, which evaluates helmets both in hockey and in football to determine their concussion prevention levels. Doctor, I want to talk to you about the football study, because I assume, given your location in Virginia Tech, that was probably your first area of expertise, is to look at football helmets. You know, and since you've started the study, how have football helmets evolved in the course of eliminating concussion risks? And do you hope to see hockey helmets evolve in a similar manner?
When we started in 2011, there was one football helmet that was not recommended in the range. There was also one that was five-star. Now we have 12 five-star helmets. So basically every manufacturer is making a five-star helmet. In terms of risk, if you look at the difference between the bottom and the top, and that's what we always talk about. So if you move from a one-star helmet to a four or five-star, that reduces your risk by about 50%. It's important to note it does not eliminate it. There's always risk. But the reduction in accelerations are dramatic. Cutting your accelerations from 100 Gs in one impact to 50 Gs with a little better helmet. So these are big differences in acceleration. And yes, we hope we'll see that same kind of development in the hockey industry.
I was reading on ESPN, they were writing about your study, and they were saying that these findings are going to be potentially more detrimental or worse for the hockey helmet industry than they were for the football helmet industry. Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think there's more room for progress. When we first started in football, there were four-star helmets and a five-star, but there were a lot of not recommended one-star and two-star, so there was more of a... I think on the hockey side, there's an open gap there that we hope will be populated very soon with these four and five star helmets.
Doctor, do you think that, you know, we've heard a lot about football in the States and in Canada as well, about, you know, enrollment of parents being concerned about their children and the physical impact that, you know, that they incur on a really on a daily basis or whenever, how often they play. You know, hockey has received some attention in that regard, but a little bit less. Do you see parents having their children avoid these sports and, you know, and playing, say, soccer, basketball, baseball in lieu of hockey and football?
You know, I talk to parents all the time, and what I tell them is we need to be very careful or we're all going to end up playing tennis and golf, and those are the only two sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is every sport has risk. You know, my son happens to be a basketball player, very competitive, and there's not a game that goes by that someone doesn't come out after getting hit in the head. So you can watch any soccer game. Kids right. get hit in the head. They come out head-to-head, head-to-shoulder. So there's a risk in every sport we play. And the important thing is to do those three things. Whatever sport it is, you have good rules, you have good coaching, and you have the best equipment. But we need the kids to be active, and we need all the sports to be as safe as possible.
You know, it's really interesting stuff. And if you were to watch the highlights, and you probably speak to this, Doctor, in terms of, say, 20 years ago, and the attention that big hits get now on television, really have for the past 10, 15 years, especially the highlights and now Vines and all these things, whereas 10, 15, say 20 years ago, the game, at least to me, and maybe football and hockey, wasn't about the big hit. It was about separating the player from the puck or from the football, and now it's so sensationalized. How much of a factor is that in terms of violence and the dangers that the players face?
Well, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, you saw a lot of that sort of peak in the sensationalism, and you'd see highlight reels of, you know, he got jacked up or this or that, but that definitely changed in the past couple years, and specifically the last year. If you look at the NFL, I think they did a very good example of basically eliminating players, you know, teeing off on each other's heads. You know, they've almost ruled that out of the game. It happens occasionally, but nothing like it used to happen 5 or 10 years ago. So the rules are very important, and I think the leagues, whether it's NFL, NHL, they can do a lot to minimize the head impact. And not getting hit in the head is, of course, the best situation.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Dr. Stefan Duma, head of the Virginia Tech Department of Biomedical Engineering and Mechanics. Dr. Duma, I want to ask you, obviously, you're doing this study, and you're, you know, in some regards, criticizing helmet manufacturers and the helmets that they're making. What connection or what contact do you have between your study and those that manufacture the helmets themselves?
Well, our goal is to work with the manufacturers. So we have an open process. They've come to our lab over the past year. We've had several meetings. We've given away our methods. So they can recreate this. We realize that the current standards have done a great job at preventing skull fractures, and that's what the helmets are designed for. So we want to work with the manufacturers and help them design improved protection so we can start to lower the risk of concussions.
Doctor, your study, if I'm not mistaken, was just released Monday. I guess the question is, what's the next step? Is it, as you mentioned, to continue working with the manufacturers, or is it maybe to even take this study further?
So what we're doing with the ratings is we have a rolling system. So as soon as a company produces a new helmet, we'll buy it, test it, and we'll put it on the rating system. So it might be next month, it might be 3 months from now, but as soon as these helmets come out, we'll test them, put them up, and it'll be a continuous fashion. So our ultimate hope is within the next 6 to 12 months, you'll see several helmets from different manufacturers populate the 4- and 5-star level.
And final question for you, Doctor. And parents, I think maybe even hockey more than any sport, the cost of equipment is almost exorbitant. And I'm wondering if the new helmet or the helmet that eventually is modified, is there a cost issue? Will it be far more expensive? Do we have any information to that? And I realize, obviously, safety is paramount. You really pay whatever you have to take care of your child's head or your own head. But is that something that could be a concern at all in terms of increasing costs for parents?
Well, it's interesting, and that gets into the business. So if there's only one company that comes out with one helmet, and that's the only 5-star helmet, they can charge a premium. And we saw that in football. Originally, there was only one 5-star helmet, and they could charge a premium because they had the best helmet. Now there's 12 5-star helmets, and that drives the prices down, and they're competitive. So that's what we hope will happen. Basically, we want to see an emergence of a series of helmets that are all at the top level, and then the price will come down. That's what we hope happens very soon.
Dr. Stefan Duma is the head of the Virginia Tech Department of Biomedical Engineering and Mechanics. He's the author of this fascinating study about how safe your hockey helmet actually is. Dr. Duma, appreciate your time this evening and keep up the good work on behalf of really parents everywhere who really appreciate this information.
Thank you. Happy to help.
Thank you very much, Dr. Duma. Really interesting stuff here. I mean, this is a great study. We'll tweet out a link to it where you can read the ESPN article about it and the look at the study itself. This is really interesting work, and the advancements they've made in football is really impressive, and you hope the hockey manufacturers continue along the same lines.
You know, I think, sorry, Richie, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we thank Dr. Duma for coming on, and I think, you know, you see the results of the study, and if you're a parent especially, we coached Rich, you got to be concerned, and you got to hope that they're going to take the recommendations in the study and really improve, because I think we've come a long way. But when you see a study like this saying that a lot of these helmets are getting the one-star, two-star rating, it's pretty shocking.
That's great information, and certainly nothing. There's no downside to that. There's only upside.
Absolutely. Big thanks to Dr. Duma for joining us. Big thanks to LA Kings insider John Rosen for joining us earlier on the program. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Reminder, 8 a.m. Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets play at 2 o'clock, so 8 a.m. on Saturday. Note the start time. For producer Michael Remus, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek, and until Saturday, we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.